Are you overwhelmed by motherhood and barely keeping your head above water? Are you confused and frustrated by how all the other moms make it look so easy? You can't figure out how to manage the chaos in your mind, your home, or your family. I get you, mama. Parenting with ADHD is hard. Here is your permission slip to let go of the Pinterest-worthy visions of organization and structure fit for everyone else. Let's do life like our brains do life. Creatively, lovingly, and with all our might. When we embrace who we are and how our brains work, we can figure out how to live our lives successfully, and in turn, lead our families well. At the end of the day, we just want to be good moms, but spoiler alert, you are already a great mom. ADHD does not mean you're doomed to be a hot mess, mama. You can rewrite your story from shame spiral to success story. And I'll be right here beside you to cheer you on. Welcome to Motherhood in ADHD. Hey there, successful mama. Have you ever witnessed something really beautiful and totally missed how special it was in that moment? And it wasn't until it was over that you realized just how special that moment was. Well, these two episodes that you're about to hear are just that. Back in July, I volunteered with ADDA, which is the nonprofit that helps adults with ADHD thrive, and they hosted AGGA, a global gathering for an innovative way of doing an international conference to learn about your ADHD. Now, if you're not familiar with ADDA, go check them out. They have really solid resources and support groups for a membership that's totally affordable. It's not even 10 bucks a month. Head over to add.org and check them out. Now, during this conference, one of the events was a women's town hall, and a couple hundred women showed up. Board member Michelle Price first hosted four of the original women who set out to start the conversations about women with ADHD back in the day. This event was followed by a second conversation of trailblazers, women in the BIPOC community who are stepping up and sharing their story of having ADHD, especially as a woman of color. Now, at the time of the event, I was actually moderating the questions, which was totally overwhelming, to be totally honest. And it wasn't until we were well into the event, like a solid hour, hour and a half, before I realized what I was witnessing before me. The honesty and the brokenness, the hope and the healing, the persistence and the courage, seeing women in community. It is my honor to share with you these conversations, honoring the women who have come before us and the women who are stepping up now to spearhead change in the ADHD community, in how ADHD is perceived in the world around us, and how it's talked about, especially in communities of color, where it's particularly not safe to talk about your weaknesses. Now, because this was a very long event, I'm breaking it up into two parts. In the first section, you'll have guests Lori Dupar, Liz Lewis, Terry Matlin, and Linda Rogley. And in the second part, we have guests Inger Shea Colsey, Sudita Kasturi, and Victoria Navarro. You will also hear from the audience as this was an interactive event. Now, fair warning, we were using a brand new technology, so you will hear us learning throughout this event. And I am always proud of us ADHDers for being willing to tackle new and innovative things. If you are here for these kinds of conversations, the openness and the sharing with a group of women who have brains who work like yours, you are my kind of people. You deserve to have a safe space to talk with women whose brains work like yours and grow those relationships. You deserve a space to be yourself. You deserve a space for rest and relaxing and taking care of you. And you also deserve some good food in a hotel room all to yourself. So that sounds like your kind of deal. You are invited to join our ADHD Moms Luxury Retreat that I am hosting here in Houston, Texas. It is an all-inclusive event, so once you get your ticket, you just show up and I take care of everything for you. I take care of the planning, taking care of the meals, the hotel. You get to turn off the mental load and just enjoy the freedom of being there and taking care of only yourself. Most of the decisions I'm going to take care of for you, so you simply get to enjoy. And we are going to sit together and have these kinds of conversations in person. And while there's definitely not going to be several hundred women there, it's a small group of women, I want to sit with you and spend quality time getting to know you, answering your questions about ADHD, for you to know that you're not weird because of this weird quirky thing you do, that the rest of us in this community do a lot of those things too. And knowing that you're not alone is one of the best gifts that you can give yourself, along with taking care of you. So put yourself on the priority list and come on to Houston October 7th through 9th. You can reserve your ticket at patriciasung.com/ADHD-mom-retreat. So I'll see you in Houston next month to hold conversations in person just like these. So join me now as you come behind the scenes into this event that was so beautifully hosted by Ada. And hear what are the women in our community talking about right now? What's on their hearts? What are they struggling with? Let's hear from this growing community in the ADHD world of women who are world changers. Welcome to Ada's Women's Town Hall during the Global Gathering event in July 2020.
So we're here to celebrate. We're here to celebrate tonight. Yes. Woo, woo, woo. This is a celebration. So everybody hit the F key. So we're here to celebrate our ADHD Trailblazers tonight. They've been doing this for 30 years. Okay, before they thought that adults could even get ADHD. They've been doing this. We're here to get a pulse on the state of women in ADHD. Why? Because the current treatment is based on little boys. There's not a lot of research. You know, what is it? What's it all about? And so when I went looking, I've been looking for a while, I discovered I had ADHD at 42. I think it was 42 years old. My first client told me I had ADHD. That's how I find out. When he said it, I thought to myself, what did I do that made him think that I had ADHD? All right? I don't know what that was. His name is John Assaraf. He was my first client. Some of you might know who he is. He runs a program called NeuroGym. And so after I worked with him on his book, I got another client. A friend called me up, hey, can you do this? I can't do it. I said, sure, I'll do it. What's the name of the book? Healing Anxiety and Depression by this guy named Dr. Daniel Amen. And I realized, okay, somebody's trying to tell me something. Because then I realized I went to his site and I took the test. And I realized, oh my gosh, yes. I may have this thing. And so that began my journey. And so I wound up at Ada to my granddaughter. She got a scholarship from Evelyn Green, who's another trailblazer. And so I got involved that way. And so I want to say that, hey, you know, we're smart. We can figure this out. We're going to have to do this ourselves. And the next thing I do, here's this State of Women in ADHD town hall, because that's what we do. We kind of just take control and we start to do things. And so it's not the last of these events. We're going to do a series of these types of events or, you know, town halls to stay connected and to get us all connected in a community. So stay tuned for that. And I wanted to read something that came from Linda Rodley today because we were talking about the town hall that we're going to do and how much we have done over the last, I don't know, 30 years. That's a long time. I mean, some of us are not even 30. I know I'm not 30. But anyway, I gave her the questions, and then she actually responded, and I loved her response. And I'm going to read a little bit of it for you. It says, yes, it's a great time to share the progress we have made, but we will all say exactly the same things. That Sari's book opened the door. That women are still underdiagnosed, especially those with inattentive ADHD, that there is a difference between the way ADHD manifests between men, boys, and girls or women, or those with estrogen fluctuations, that more research is needed, especially around hormones and ADHD, that women tend to internalize ADHD missteps, which leads to a higher rate of self-harm and suicidal ideation. The answers are pretty well established. And what's missing is research. There is inherent bias in research towards males, even in animal studies, that carries through ADHD. But hormonal gender fluidity, psych diagnoses like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, polycystic ovary syndrome are barely touched in the literature. And she says, I think what women want to hear are specifics. So we decided to go ahead and let you ask away. And so the way that we're going to operate this is that you're going to walk to the podium. There's a podium over there. You can see it. I don't know where it is, but it's to your left. It says, ask your question on the floor. And if you want to ask a question, you slide over there and you go ahead and you just ask your question, okay? And then I want you to know that we're creating a safe space here. So we're just going to open it up for panel one. And panel, we've got two panels tonight. One panel is, I like to call the OG ADHD Trailblazers. They're the OGs, right? They've been around 30 years. And then we've got the BIPOC panel, which is, they have maybe been at it for 30 years, but they are trailblazing in the people of color space, Black, Indigenous people of color space, because it's really important that we get to us, I guess, is what I'll say. So on panel one tonight, it's going to start in 2 minutes. We've got Terry Matlin, Linda Rogley. Terry Matlin is distraction. Linda Rogley, she's ADD, DIPA. She does all the paloozas. We got Lori Dupar. She runs the coaching center. We've got Liz Lewis, who works with healthy ADHD. And Michelle Frank couldn't make it. She sends her greetings. She's on vacation. And Evelyn Green, she's an OG. She bridges the BIPOC. And then I will give a shout out to my BIPOC trailblazers. And that panel will start after this one. And that's Ingrid Shekolzi, that's Sedita Kasturi, and Victoria Navarro. So I would love to kick this off with, does any of the panelists want to say something? Or do we have, if you have a question, the podium is right over there, and just step up and ask your question.
Michelle, I didn't know you were going to read all of it today, because that's not all the research that's missing. There's a lot more research.
Okay, I'll talk to you once.
I was just doing that to send you an email. But it is true, because Sarah Silverman's book, Women in ADHD, kicked this off in 1997, somewhere in that vicinity.
95.
Yeah, 95, that's exactly right, which is about the time that Ned Halliwell's book came out, Driven to Destruction, when finally we realized adults could have this as well. But I do want to give us some acknowledgement for where the fact that we have come so far, and especially a shout-out to Dr. Steve Henshaw, who has done the only longitudinal study on girls with ADHD. He started with them when they were just in primary school, and now they're in their late 20s. And he's the one that did the research that shows that there's much, much higher percentage of girls and women with ADHD who do self-harm, like cutting and burning, and also suicide is also higher in our population. But the good news is that we do have this. You know, we've evolved to create this. And there are the paloozas, and there are Terry Matlin's, all kinds of programs that she does. There are things out there. So there is more support than there used to be, because when I was diagnosed in 97, it was like I wanted to talk to somebody else about ADHD, and there was no one to talk to. At least I thought there wasn't. But chances are good. I knew a lot of people with ADHD. They just didn't know it.
Right. That's the thing. They don't know it.
Exactly. All right. I just wanted to put this out there because there's so much to say, but I just wanted to at least start us off with something.
Okay. I see Teresa's at the podium.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Hey, I think Linda started going into part of what I was going to ask. I live in a city, small city. I live in a city where there are two universities, as well as a biomedical research center and a big medical industry. And so I guess my follow-up to that is what you mentioned was, what do we need to do to ask for, right, and to get more research going?
Linda, I think that would be a great question for you.
Well, I don't have a really good answer, because you know that research requires money. And in order to get money, we've got to have, I think there are people out there who are interested. I don't know if a lot of you know about Dr. Sandra Coy in the Netherlands, but she published this year the first ever study that she calls it mood cycles, which is about our monthly cycles and how our moods go up and down, how estrogen affects it, et cetera, et cetera. But what we've done for a long time, like Dr. Patricia Quinn, who's now retired, bless her heart, pulled information from information about regular women and regular meeting, non-ADHD women, but could be some ADHD women, from that and from her own expertise and from her clinical experience, and pushed it together to make some research. But what I really want, and I know that we have people out there that are excited to do this, is I want specific research. Let's check estrogen levels and see what kind of mood goes with that. And just so you know, what I was going to say about Dr. Sandra Coy is that when I met her a few years ago, because I told her that my program was AD Diva, and she said, oh my gosh, that's what we call our people, our women in the Netherlands, which had nothing to do with divas. It was just an initial, you know, it was like a what am I trying to say, an acronym for what they do. But she actually was inviting me to help her do crowdsource funding. That's how she was going to get it done. And she needed hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this study. She couldn't get the government of the Netherlands to pay for it. I'm not sure how she got this particular study funded, but I just need to say that we need a lot of money. And in order to get a lot of money, where do we generally get that? Universities, unfortunately pharmaceutical companies, and that skews those results in my opinion. So we need pure research foundations with pure research that are specially devoted to women and girls' issues and non-binary. So that's the answer, and I wish I had a better one. But maybe we need to send our NIH, you know, send our NIMH, mental health, National Institute of Mental Health in the United States, to get our funding done.
So what kind of money are you talking about?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, hi, it's Lori. I wanted to hop in there whenever Linda was done.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I agree with you, Linda. Historically, women have been on certainly the low end of the totem pole with any kind of research. I mean, we look at cancer, we look at heart disease, all of that, women were studied later on. I'm kind of one, and again, maybe it's my Pollyanna nature that is... research is always behind what we know anyway. And eventually you do need research, but I'm wondering if there is a way to, I don't think it's necessarily expensive. You don't have to invite people to track sometimes their menstrual cycles, to track their, to create tools that track those things. If you have all that data down, it's sort of like, I know you're going through the side door to get it. But once you have that data down, someone's going to go, oh my goodness, I had no idea. I want to pick that up. Are you ready to do this? I know that happens. And it may be putting the cart before the horse, but at least it gets us going. I would love to see research beyond just with ADHD, but also tracking girls in their menses. I mean, we know that the reason that women have challenges with ADHD is because of that change in estrogen. That happens every month for people. That is sort of, to me, like, why are we not looking at that? And it is not that hard, 50% of the population, to have someone be willing to track their mood, their memory, their ability to concentrate, and start getting some data. Don't depend on the researchers who we know we're not going to change right now. We're not going to change. And I go to them and say, this is what we're finding out. What do you want to know? I'm a scientist. No, I'm by nature. It's not easy to say, wait for research to come out. Wait, and then I know that's what needs to happen.
Well, Lori, I will tell you that I have done a survey and more than 2,500 women have taken, women, you know, non-binary whomever, have taken the survey of women 40 and better, and I asked 125 questions, and they were very personal questions. Have you had any miscarriages? Did you have unplanned pregnancies? When did you start having your periods? I mean, it went on and on and on. But the problem is that this is anecdotal, so I didn't get it published anyway.
Well, part of it, I do is that the questions, it's amazing that you did that, Linda. I think to recall vaguely that you did that. I admire you a lot for doing that. It takes a lot of commitment. I'm thinking specifically around ADHD questions and some of the mood and memory and confusion that go along with that. And it's, I'm not sure who you approached or how you went about that. I just know, and by the way, we have people in our own ADHD community that do research, that are busy supporting our profession as why doing research. So we actually have people that we can tap into to help sort of move this along. It's not my bandwidth, but I certainly can create some sort of a flyer that says, tell me about this, tell me about that, or a tracking sheet where people can track themselves. And I'm really talking about from early on.
Yeah, this is, anybody else got any input? Anyone want to say this or get something?
Are you speaking to a lot of trade place there? I may be a
hair. Yes, it's your blazer, okay.
But I do have a blazer on, so maybe. So the thing is, for me, the other way that you can do this is to get students interested in our subject. You know, it's like if you don't have the money, then what you need is women power. Yeah, it's like women hours. And what I would do, I'm a research professor too. So I think if you get students emotion enough about this, committed enough, if whenever you speak about ADHD and the consequences we face if we do not treat it, if we don't educate or whatever, people are just astounded and they want to help. So if you teach them that they can help doing research and reading about this, and it's like just get them as emotion to start doing the research even without money. You know, not everything is about money. You can do really good stuff without the money, and most probably the first things that came out on ADHD, they were not sponsored or supported by no one, and that was why they were so good. So I think that would be something we should be looking at, just targeting universities all over the world and saying, you know what, start researching this, because this is going to be the next big thing, and you don't want to miss it. Because women with ADHD is the next big, big thing all over the world. So get on board, guy.
Okay, that's a guy. You know what? The answer to the problem is in the room, always. It always is. A research professor in our midst, and she's one of our trailblazers. So come on. It doesn't get any better than that. Dana, you had a question.
Hi there. Yeah, can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. Following on that, I want to say thank you to the panel. I don't know all of you, but I was diagnosed about a year and a half ago at the age of 59, and I immediately began looking at what is out there. How can I learn about this ADHD thing and learn about myself? And so a lot of resources, podcasts, books, and websites, I appreciated access to them. So thank you for that. One of the frustrations that I have as I try to get sort of the latest and greatest and let me know is that as a now 60-year-old woman, I'm not retired yet. I don't have children, and I identify as a cisgender lesbian woman. And everything I read, with the exclusion of one or two books I wanted to read on relationships. I think Anita Robertson has one book about ADHD and us that is for men and women, but it moves it around in terms of the examples of, you know, gay couples, lesbian couples, etc. So I don't see myself reflected in any of the research, and of course I'm a minority from the statistical population of people. So I had a lot from you folks come before me to learn that, yes, it's not just 12-year-old boys bouncing off walls, but I'm postmenopausal, so from my own personal learning, I'm less interested in what happens with my cycles. But I don't see a lot. It's very, heterosexist, to use that language, that all the examples are women and their husbands, and even when you look at what happens at home, and, that's fairly traditional domestic division of labor. It's very much follows that. And so I'm not blaming or criticizing the work that's been done. But, am I dreaming to think that I might see myself included in new publications that are in the works now? Or what can you folks do that are already writers and researchers? Or what can I do? I'd love to be a sample in a study, but I don't know how you go about doing that. Anyway, so that's kind of my, I'm not old enough to be worried about dementia and postmenopausal. I don't have kids, I don't have a husband. Yeah, so I guess that's it. I sort of throw it. So thank you, Linda, for using the term non-binary here, but it's beyond just non-binary, it's heterosexual assumptions that society at large has held, so it's not a big thing.
It's fascinating, right? All the generations are represented here. We've got boomers, we've got Gen X, we've got Xennials, we've got millennials, we've got Gen Zers. I think that we can figure this out.
Let's also talk for just a moment, let's move away from research and talk about the dearth of support among the professional community, because I've talked to many women who say that they go to a doctor, they've been diagnosed with depression, they go to a doctor and one of them says, oh, you have ADHD, and they go to a different doctor, perhaps they move or something, and the next one says, you don't have ADHD, or ADHD is missed so often. So I'd love to have a conversation about that, and not just me.
I'm just trying to pop in here, this is Terry. I think that I get a lot of emails like you do in most of the panel, and that's probably the number one question I get is, I can't find a clinician who understands ADHD and misdiagnosed, or that gets the depression but not the ADHD. Maybe I have both. What do I do? What do I do? And even a lot of professionals who do. The lesson was, as a group now, I think that we need to educate our professionals, those who know about ADHD but are still clueless, and those who know nothing about ADHD and are totally clueless. This is like the number one question I get in email almost every day, and in the the presentations that I do, what can we do? Here we are, 120-some-odd people, and yes, research is extremely important, I totally agree, but these are the things that I'm hearing on a daily basis.
What, how to get a diagnosis?
An appropriate diagnosis and treatment.
The
catch-all is depression. Oh, you can't get your laundry done. You can't do this. You can't do that. Well, obviously you're depressed, and they miss the ADHD.
Michelle, can I jump in here?
Yes.
So one of the things that I have started doing is reaching out to medical practices and offering to educate them about ADHD, because therapists are not all therapists are ADHD informed. And so that has helped them to see that this is a bigger issue than the children, even when they're working with adults, is for them to understand that this is there, and how it affects women is different than how it affects men. And that has been very well appreciated. Of course, this is my local community that I am doing it in, and it's been easier to get into practices where either I knew somebody or we had gone to versus cold calling a practice. But I wonder if it would be helpful for all of us in our local areas to start reaching out and seeing if we can do this, where we explain to them how ADHD affects adults and how it is affected by gender and all the other issues that may come with that.
Yeah, I think it's real clear, and the timing is good, clearly, what we're doing. I think we probably need to have another like meeting separate from this, some type of an ADHD Women's Collective or something, you know, where we can talk about this and like really get a plan together, you know. It seems like that would make sense. So, Margo, you're...
Michelle?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, it's Lori DePart.
Hey, Lori.
As someone who's had, my background is as a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, so I've had both of my feet on both sides of the fence with regards to what is taught, what isn't taught in the medical community. I'm just saying, we are beating our head against a wall to try and change that system. It's not going to happen. It just isn't. It's not going to happen quick enough, let me put it that way. What I realize, and it's surprising after doing this, you've been doing it 30 years, Michelle, I've been doing it 20 years, that, again, it's, I think it was Terry that was saying, we're getting these questions of people that are having difficulty finding practitioners to be able to diagnose, and diagnosticians to be able, and prescribers to be able to prescribe. The fact is, very little education is done in the medical community, and the people that are really good at it is because they've taken a personal interest in it. I truly believe that part of what we can do, and again, it's not waiting to change somebody else, that's almost impossible, is to, what can we do to help educate other women? I teach a class on medication, and the reason I do that is because, again, that's my background, I have that information, but they're not getting it. People are not getting that information anywhere else. I've given up trying to change the medical community. I'm thrilled when I have someone that
cares.
Interesting, literally, what they hear. So I would encourage people to think about, if there's something that you're frustrated about not getting, or people asking you and them not knowing, what is it that you could put together that helps share with them about what the next step is? And I'm truly convinced that if you're not getting what you need from one of the prescribers or diagnosticians that you're looking at,
go to the next one.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not going to help you or them for you to hang around. They just don't know. And they're not interested enough.
And Lori, what is a symptom of not, like, how? One of the things that we have a hard time doing sometimes is pushing, like, medical professionals. I worked in healthcare for 19 years, academic medicine, and teaching hospital. And people would be pissed they would be so upset at waiting so long for the doctor. They're harassing me, they're harassing the staff, and they get in with the doctor, and it's, hi, doctor. And we don't push. So maybe we should learn, you know, I can see there's a lot of stuff we can do.
I've been known to walk out of an office and say, you know what, my time is precious as yours. If you're more than 15 minutes late, we need to reschedule. I still find it fascinating. They don't have clocks in there. What do they think? We don't have a phone on us, right? But I think we feel very desperate to have someone. So we're going to maybe change and be, if we're nice, maybe that's going to do it. The fact is that the doctors I don't want to say doctors because other people can diagnose ADHD, have been taught a different language to listen for. And we're walking in there saying, I can't get my laundry done. I can't get to work on time. I'm forgetting to pick up my kids at work. That's not translating to them as I'm forgetful, I'm distracted, all of that. It's not. So another thing that I do is I'm like, how to speak to the medical profession or the words that the doctor's going to hear. It's not putting words in people's mouths, but it's saying they're just not listening for that. And to change that model, it's not going to happen. 20 years, not going to happen.
Yeah, I actually worked for the chief academic officer who trained, who was the medical students. And that's when I figured out, this is never going to change. And I left the healthcare industry and went to tech.
Michelle, can I say something?
Absolutely.
Somebody who's also a practitioner, I'm a psychotherapist, an ADHD coach. And I wasn't diagnosed till I was in my 50s. And, you know, what I find with the women that come to me every day is getting a proper diagnosis. As I always say, you know, people say, should I get diagnosed? I'm like, yes. But it's a privilege. It is not a right. And that's what really makes me upset, you know. So as somebody who is a practitioner, I don't even think we got a paragraph about ADHD, let alone it being for adults. And for the women that I know, like, they will walk into an office and the bias that they'll get from a lot of psychiatrists, you know, be it conscious or unconscious, is that you're already walking in anything that you say is wrong, as you were saying, Laura. It's like if you're upset because you don't know what is quite going on and everybody is judging you, you have anxiety or you have depression or you're bipolar or you're just, right? We're not going to diagnose. We're not going to give you the benefit of any type of diagnosis. I also have a lot of women who are really, 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 really high achievers. So they have lots of degrees, they do lots of different things, and they do a lot of masking. And so when they walk into a clinician's office, no one will diagnose them because they're like, well, you're a doctor, you're a veterinarian, you're a lawyer.
Yeah, you can't have ADHD.
You can't have ADHD. So I, too, give language around it. I, too, try to find providers for people. And that's why, you know, as I'm starting the Black ADHD Coaches Association, it's also going to be allied professionals. So to have professionals that we know get ADHD, adult ADHD, and are willing to listen to people where they are, and if they would like medications, prescribe it. Because then there's that also, you know, issue of not just wanting to prescribe, what that means, the way that they don't really understand how it is affected by your age, but not maybe as much as they think. So having people that already understand, I think that might be the only way to be able to get other professionals to understand, is by professionals that are like them, to have those conversations. So
can I ask a question of the senior, my peers up here? So some of us have been doing this and trying to do what you're talking about, Inger, for the last 25, 30 years. And I think, Linda, you started off by saying, maybe I'm wrong, that you see some progress with maybe the research part of it, I don't remember now, but I personally am not seeing a huge leap from what I was doing back in 95 to what I'm doing now. I think I do see a change in more women inquiring about, could this be something besides depression or anxiety or substance abuse, but I'm not seeing that in the professional so much. I'm curious to hear what the rest of the panel has to say about what changes, what have we seen in the last 25, 30 years?
Victoria?
Yeah. For me, like, one of the big things is social media. You know, it's like before, like in some decades ago or whatever, you wouldn't be on an internet yet. This thing, this online thing, this community everywhere around is where you can start. For me, it will change, really starts. Yeah, it's like you go, you can either wait for things to come up from the top of the pyramid down, or you can just work on the basis and go up. Yeah, it will take us some time, but at least now you can have access to almost everything. You can speak about everything. And so if you get women educated, you can request what you need. You can do it even here in Argentina. So if you can do it here, you can do it everywhere. You know, it's like you can actually now you can tell doctors you are wrong. You don't know about this. And I know about it because I read about it. I educated myself about it. And you are not going to be telling me that this is not ADHD. You cannot say that anymore to me because I know it is. And I know it is because, I don't know, Lina Romney told me that it is, yeah? When I was like, I didn't remember because it's like, I can do it now because it's like we are able to use this that we are using to put all the information out so everyone else can have access to it. I think that's a big one. I think that will create change.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just want to follow up with that. Let's just put this in chat. When Terry said there's not been much progress, the ratio of boys to girls that were diagnosed was 10 to 1 20 years ago. Now it is 3 to 1. So more and more girls are being diagnosed. When you get to adult level, it's even Steven. There's one woman to every man or one adult person. I'm not going to go into all the gender issues because I'll forget somebody. But you hear my point here is that we really and truly have made some progress, and mostly it's women who come saying something's wrong. So I think you're absolutely right. There's more awareness out there, at least. And even having, I know medication's a touchy subject, but even having advertisements for ADHD medication makes a difference. And we all know that a lot of women are diagnosed with ADHD, or a lot of moms are diagnosed with ADHD when their children are diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So even that kind of filters down. So I agree, Terry, we got a long way to go. But maybe Virginia Slims, we've come a long way.
That's what I said, we've come a long way, baby.
So here's, let me get back to why I brought this up.
Okay.
So one of my groups, I run a lot of different groups, but one of the groups I have on Facebook.
Amira, I see you. We see you. We're going to get you your question, okay?
Good. One of the groups I run on Facebook is a free support group specifically for women who identify, people who identify as women. I have 36,000 women in this group.
Mm.
And that group has been running for about 20-some-odd years, and I hear the same thing. My doctor doesn't understand. I don't know what medication to take. Why is this happening to me? Why da, da, da. And it's like I'm just, it's very frustrating for me who's trying to get the education out there to the women, like we're all trying to do, and we're doing that here tonight, and then hearing the same questions over and over and over. So, Linda, I agree with you that the stats are changing, that more women are being identified, but why am I still getting the same?
Oh, I am too. I think we all are. I think we all are, and it is really frustrating. We hear the same questions over and over and over, but that just means that the information hasn't seeped into that corner of their universe, right?
So I wonder if we can use some of these groups that you run groups, and a lot of us run groups. What can we do to this huge amount of women who are searching for help, who are understanding it and sharing it within their group, but we're not getting it out further than that?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's why we're doing this. Because
yes.
So that we can all be in the same room at the same time and actually, because when will we all be able to get together, all of us in one place, in one space, to even talk about it? I think that's what's exciting about this. We actually make time to do this, and that's how we do it. I think that's how it's going to get done. We have Amira, though. Amira has a question.
I think Linda just now was talking about how you have anecdotal data from like 125 women from a survey.
I have 2,500 women. There are 125 questions.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I was just wondering, you know, I'm not an expert or anything, but I'm just wondering, I know that medical journals are a lot more stringent when it comes to the sampling and the methodology, but there are, I think, and Victoria probably would know even better than I do, there are a lot of social science journals and humanities journals that actually appreciate they don't just, you know, accept it, but they appreciate data based on lived experience. So lived experience data from just like, you know, several women, like 10 women or 20 women, can't be accepted, I think, in those kinds of journals. So if you've got 2,500 that's probably something that those kinds of journals would probably be willing to consider. Although I know that if you go into social science journals, that's probably not going to help change things in the medical professions, because I think the medical sciences or the health sciences are probably, they don't really think much, I think, in general of the social science journals. But just like what Victoria was saying just now, and I think Linda as well, what happens is that in the social sciences, I think it's just really spreading. It's probably like the next big thing kind of thing, like what Victoria was saying. And I'm noticing that in my own country, in Malaysia, prior to 2018 or so, there was just no resources for ADHD. And then a few people kind of got together and started groups or Facebook groups, and it kind of grew from that. And now we're thriving, we're growing. So social media plays a really, really big role. And I can see that with the growth of knowledge and the growth of the community and the support within my country alone. And of course, most of the doctors are not really, you know, most of the psychiatrists are not really joining that community, but when you have one or two psychiatrists or clinicians or psychologists who do join that community, their voices actually help to amplify our needs, and we're looking for the kind of support that we're looking for. And that is really helpful in terms of trying to get a foot in the door. So I'm now trying to, I haven't started yet through my ADHD, I'm trying to write out a research proposal to request for a grant to do some research on ADHD. And that would have been something I wouldn't have considered some time ago. But now I actually have this group, this kind of like this legitimate group with a legitimate psychiatrist that I can tap on and say, hey, you know, I have external collaborators who I can call upon. And just by doing that, I think my proposal, when it gets done, finally, whether or not I get it is another story, but it would be considered, it wouldn't be just dismissed. I just wanted to share about that. Just one other thing I wanted to share also about students. I work in a university in Malaysia, and I have research students, but I'm not an ADHD professional. I'm in the social sciences. I had two students. One applied to do research with me, and he wanted to do some kind of study on media portrayal of Alzheimer's disease. And I had another student who wanted to look at the impact of apps or social media and how it helps people with mental illness or depression. And these aren't my areas of expertise, but I did ask them, would they consider doing a similar study, but looking at the ADHD population? And they were open to it. I mean, it's not something that, I mean, we can't force people to do research that wouldn't be ethical, and it wouldn't work anyway if they're not interested, but they were open to it. I gave them resources about ADHD to read, and they found it fascinating. And now they're actually quite open to switching their population to looking at the ADHD population. So yeah, I just wanted to share about that. Thank you so much.
Okay. And then there's Lisa in Ohio after Amira.
Before Lisa steps up, we have some audience questions whenever we're ready.
Okay,
do you want me to go or Lisa?
You go ahead, because I think you probably had the questions before.
Yeah, we are actually meeting with Amira on Thursday to get all this thing with our students going on. So that's what I meant. It's like, it is happening. It is happening sooner than later.
Oh, Terry asked the question about what have we noticed, those of us that have, you know, are here because of the length of time we've been doing this. And I really wanted to go back to that because it's one of the things that is very difficult and about doing this for 20 years is that whatever the numbers are saying, and I thank you, Linda, for sharing those, that I do get asked the same questions and it's still surprising to me. And I thought that, I mean, we started doing this, guys, before there was the internet. So I thought, oh gosh, the internet's here. Everybody's going to find out the information. Yay, we'll
all be good.
That didn't change anything. But then we think, okay, well, social media's here. So gosh darn, that's going to get the message out.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to have changed it either. I just kind of wanted to echo what you were saying because I think when we've spent so much of our lives, so Linda and Liz and Terry and myself doing this, it can be a bit disheartening to see a little change is not enough when we realize how many other women are struggling with this and not knowing this, and young girls and older. who are struggling with this. One of the things that I noticed that I have started to do in our training program, because it's just something that doesn't have anything to do with somebody doing research that one day or waiting years to get that and then hoping somebody pays attention, is I truly encourage my students to talk about this. We can do this today. Are we talking about ADHD and sharing with people about what we know if they're wanting to know about it? I think that's one of the things that why ADHD has stayed in the closet so long, not only for women, but also, you know, for the entire population. We need to get comfortable talking about this, and then that other person is going to feel comfortable talking to us about it. I believe that that's a huge key that we can do every day to make a difference in the awareness of ADHD. Absolutely.
One of the ways around that is, from what I'm hearing a lot over the years, a sense of shame that so many, if not most, women are experiencing, and then they don't want to share their difficulties, their diagnosis, if they're lucky to get an accurate one, with other people, let alone the professionals. And I think the professionals, for the most part, don't understand that piece of it.
Right. And if we do, Linda, I mean, Terry, like, we've been talking about this forever. I mean, we know we get the deer in the headlights look, right? We know that people step back thinking they're going to catch it from us, right? Those kind of no, I'm saying, we know this, and yet, and we're always meeting people with ADHD, right? The world's full of them.
Yep.
We talk about it in a comfortable way. That shame of that person hearing us, not being ashamed of it, allows them to maybe share a little bit. I really believe that that is a huge piece of this. We're relying on these big things to make the change, like it's going to trickle down to all the people that are impacted by ADHD. We can. I'm not saying it's necessarily grassroots, but just talking to other people who, when you mention you're an ADHD coach or you work in the ADHD industry, and they say, oh my gosh, I have ADHD. I mean, all of us have had multiple times that that's happened. Talk about it with them if they want to. That brings that shame out of the closet.
So we all need to be ambassadors of sorts.
ADHD ambassadors, yes. But I will say, on the flip side, for many people of color, this is a safety issue. Right? Some people cannot walk and just decide they're just going to disclose that they have ADHD. So it's just something to really look at in a way that works for everyone. You know, I'm out here doing this, being out there showing, you know, things that I can do and having my group. For a lot of women who are misunderstood, and they realize it's a safety issue, because we're already misunderstood, and then when you add ADHD on top of it, you know, it can really just blow your life up, or if you're in a family where they really just don't think that ADHD is a thing. So you have to think about it and tread lightly, and have small conversations sometimes that might lead to bigger conversations, because some of the safety concerns that I see on a daily basis just doesn't allow for that to be a blanket statement.
I apologize if it came across like that. What I was talking about is that if somebody comes up to you and wants to start talking about it, we're all vulnerable, honestly. If somebody wants to talk about it, I'm willing to. I'm certainly not going to open up a conversation if somebody's not. I do think, though, that my comfort level of being able to talk about it if somebody's wanting to explore it helps them be able to be a little happy. If nothing else, have a community where they feel understood, which has been sorely lacking for them.
Well, we all have communities, right? All of us here.
Everybody makes their own community. Now, Patricia has some questions, and then we've got Lisa in Ohio. And then I'm going to say, well, I can get this in. It's 6:31. We started a little late. We'll go a little, maybe like 10 more minutes with this, and then we'll flip side to the BIPOC panel. But it sounds like everybody's just jumping in, so we can keep it like this if you guys have time. If you have to leave, I understand. I really want to honor you and appreciate you. And Liz, you've been very quiet. Liz, she's been so quiet.
Okay, to stick sort of in the same theme, is the women are asking, what specifically can we share, both with professionals and with others, in order to spread awareness? Like, can we give some specific examples that people can use?
It's like what Lori, you were saying, like the examples, yeah. For me, the big one is
I cannot do my laundry. I forget to wash my hair. I know, I go to work and I forgot my charger. So I got my computer, but then I can't plug in anywhere. So what's the use of taking my computer? Or I forget my computer and then I think someone stole it or whatever. Yeah, and I get into these panic things. And so for me, it's like, make it real, you know? And I get, Lori, what you're saying is, as more comfortable as we get with everything, you know, it's like how big ADHD is, this gigantic octopus that gets all over our life. And you start throwing those small sparks, and it's like, Linda, when I go to your, let's get organized. And I realized I was not like the only quarter/ I don't even know what to do with whatever. And everyone was celebrating my, you know what, you got like that centimeter here in the floor. That's great, woman. It's like, really? Can I get celebrated for this? I mean, sharing a light. That's what I would say, you know? And that's why I like social media. And everyone is sharing all these perfect lives that I feel like just annoying. So why about just sharing who we are and let other people say, well, I can relate to that. Well, if that means that I have ADHD, and I say, yeah, most probably, girl, and I'm not a doctor or whatever, but if I can, and I like saying that I'm not a psy or whatever, I'm not a psychologist, and I know all those things, so no one can take those degrees from me. So, yeah, in my way, you might. So just explore it. You don't waste anything exploring it. And at the very least, you will not feel so bad. Yeah. Because forgetting your children at school, even if you're an amazing mom, and it's like you came back from work and you're having a cup of tea, and it's like, where are they? And you start brushing off because you forgot them, yeah? And they're standing over there, and it's like, Mom, where were you? And it's like, I just came very late from work. And it's like, no, that's not me, you know? So I have friends that exactly the same thing happened to them, and I was rushing to school. It's like, where are you? Did you pick your kids up? Yeah, just pick mine, please. And it's like, where are you? I forgot them. Those things, you know? It creates this, and I think it's even more than a community. It's sisterhood, you know? It's like, this happens to you because you're a woman and you're a mother and you are picking them up. Yeah, that's why you forgot them.
Years ago, and even now, the pharmaceuticals would publish these little pamphlets and stick them in the doctor's offices. And wouldn't it be great if we could do that just for women without, you know, having to rely on the pharmaceutical, but have someone to donate money. And then all these people that we run into as clinicians, as people with ADHD themselves, and just, you know, you go to your doctor, you drop it off and put it on the desk, or ask the receptionist, can you give this to the doctor? Maybe the doctor will learn something. I'd like to ask all of you, because this is my experience, I don't think I know of any neurologists that understand ADHD in adults. Neurologists.
So Lisa has a question in Ohio. Lisa in Ohio.
So I keep hearing, you know, we need this information. We need to get information out to people. I think we need to have one clearinghouse, because it's like I can go to the, you know, Womanpalooza and I can look at their videos, or I can go to ADDA and I can look at their webinar series, or I can go to, you know, Attitude Magazine and I can look them up, or I can go to Amazon and look up books. It goes on and on. But that isn't helpful for ADD people. What I would like to see is sort of a platform-neutral or organization-neutral clearinghouse that gives us one place. Here are books that, you know, we have a small group of people who maybe just sort of vet them, make sure, you know, they're decent. You know, here are current researchers. You know, here is, I wrote the one lady's down already, I posted, Dr. Michelle Martel, in addition to the researcher in the Netherlands. You know, here are people doing current research. Here's the links to the, you know, free, and I don't remember if it's Med Plus, because I know like a lot of the nationally sponsored researchers articles are free. And just have that clearinghouse so that not only can we send other women there, but if our physicians or psychiatrists are vaguely interested, don't make them do the research, because they're not going to do it. Just say, check out this website. And if they have a little bit of interest, maybe they'll look at it, but then they can look at what they want. And I can give you my name. I'm willing to work on that.
I'm interested. I'm interested.
Yeah, I'm interested too.
Yeah. So I can send my name and email to whoever.
Put your name in the chat. Yeah. Okay. Actually,
email me, michelle.price@add.org.
Michelle.price. Okay.
Michelle.price@add.org. We have a list. If you signed up, you RSVP'd to this, then we have your name. And if you didn't, we'll send out an email to get everybody's information.
I just wanted to throw that out there, and I try not to stir up ideas without being willing to, you know, work on them.
Yeah, we're all good at that, aren't we?
Yeah. So I wanted to throw that in before I was going to bed. So thank you so much. This is wonderful. I thank you and respect and honor you for all of your work. So
thank you. And I think that's a great idea, Lisa. I love that idea. Clearing house all for women with ADHD. You'd think we would have had that by now. I'm surprised we don't. You know,
you think about it. That's why we're all together, because, you know, together is better. So, you know what? I'd like to wrap this session. If anybody has any more questions, something they want to say, we can start the next session where Inger Shea is going to kind of kick it off. Are we good? Do we have other questions? Do you guys want to hang out? You guys want to all hang out for the next panel? If you can, you can. If you can't, no problem. Patricia, you got more questions?
The other one I have pending is about PMS and ADHD symptoms. Okay. And then specific resources that Sudita had talked about in how to share with your community. They wanted some more specific examples from her. Basically, what can we do about it? How can we improve symptoms around the time when we have big hormone fluctuations?
Women with ADHD are more likely to have PMDD, which is the extreme version of PMS, because of estrogen fall. And right before you start your period, your estrogen just goes away. I mean, estrogen and progesterone hit the bottom. And that's exactly the time that your ADHD symptoms go through the roof. And so if you're taking medication, sometimes increasing medication will help a little bit. I had irregular periods, so I couldn't predict at all. But if you have regular periods, you're going to be able to tell. So avoid planning things that require a lot of brain power at that time. And the other thing is that Dr. Sandra Coy, I appreciate somebody putting her name to spelling of her name there. Remember the woman from the Netherlands? Has found that a small dose for 3 or 4 days of antidepressant actually helps, which is counterintuitive because usually antidepressants are supposed to be on board for 2 weeks before they even take effect. But she's had good luck with that. So I just wanted to mention that, but that's all I have to say. I just wanted to be clear.
Wow. That is, I had never, ever heard that, and I had the worst periods ever from the time I was 11 years old. I mean, the pain was just unbearable. Unbearable.
Oh, I thought the sky was falling. I mean, I was going
to... My daughters do too, even now.
I would actually like to see, I know that you're right, it doesn't make sense that, and who knows if it's placebo, who knows, who doesn't know, maybe they've done that study, I don't know. But I would think, as you said, Linda, considering that the reason that so many women are diagnosed with ADHD in menopause is because of that drop in estrogen, and it's the same that happens every cycle we have in our menses. I kind of wonder, why isn't there a few days a week that we use this as a tool, medication as a tool or something, take that during that particular time of our cycle and be done with it? I mean, it would make a huge difference. I remember praying that I would not have an exam. I didn't have that much control over my life, that my kids would somehow behave, you know, 4 kids behave during my right before my period. That was not going to happen. But I honestly think these are the kinds of things I would love to see us expand into, not just once you've been diagnosed and you're taking it every day, but how can we use this as a tool, even during that time, to help people, to help women who are having those extreme symptoms with their periods. Because I'm with you, I was there.
And Lori, another point for what we're talking about tonight is how many OBGYNs understand hormonal changes.
Yeah.
None. Because Dr. Pat Quinn, when she was with us, she would talk about, what about hormone replacement? She found that helpful with her patients. But we don't, you know, let alone not understanding ADHD, what about the hormonal complications? Yeah.
So I grew up, that's Terry, right? I grew up, my mother was an OBGYN. Least supportive, empathetic man I knew about periods. I think he thought we were all making it up, honestly, until the day he died, I think he did. And yet, we know, looking at this, that's exactly what's happening, and it helps to make sense of what we were experiencing. And why do our young women have to continue to do that when we know what works?
I think think that's why, you know, two heads are better than one, and we got a whole bunch of heads in here today. So that is really, John, you had your hand up. Was that your question, or were you wanting to ask a question?
I wanted to ask a question. Are there any research organizations or websites or just research people in general, other than Dr. Coy, that we can follow to see, you know, to watch for the research as it develops?
Yeah, there's Russell Barkley, Russ Ramsey.
But for women, I mean, well,
Dr. Evan Littman is fabulous.
How do you spell that?
Littman. She's the one who's done a lot of work at the intersection of trauma and ADHD, which, and that's a whole subject we haven't even touched yet.
That's an important one, too.
That's a really, really important one.
But there's a woman in England right now, in London. She goes back and forth between several countries, but I had her on the Palooza this year, and she's specifically working with information and research about hormones and ADHD in England.
What's her name?
Her name is Sarah, and I'm sorry, I'll get tempted. I have ADHD. I can't remember.
And that's why we love you.
And it's late. Right. We'll get it. I'll get it from her.
Be sure to stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll listen to part two. Talk to you soon, successful mama. For more resources, classes, and community, head over to my website, motherhoodinadhd.com.